The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, it's Matt Michaels here on The DeFalco Files with the owner, creator of FSW, Future Stars of Wrestling here in Las Vegas, Mr. Joe DeFalco. Joe, how you doing today?
You know, every week is, you got your good things and you got your bad things. So right now we're looking at some good things. So that's, change of pace. So I'm pretty sure by the time that we finish taping today, something really shitty will come up. So looking forward to it.
The first update would be, the new regulations that are coming down from the governor, what is that doing affecting you? I think it's now, is it 12 feet? Is that the distance or what?
Right.
What is
starting
it?
starting March 15th, live entertainment and sporting events are technically allowed. So we're in the gray area because we're really not a sporting event. So technically, we're considered a live entertainment, you know. So, you know, to this day, I'll say, well, is ballroom dancing allowed? Is, ballet allowed? You know, if you can do that performance. So the only thing we're guilty of was probably, I believe, the 25-foot rule. Okay. Well, now, as of March 15th, but we can't do the event. So we're going to hold off till March 15th because it seems to be safer. And March 15th, it's now downgraded to 12 feet. Well, at 25 feet, it basically made the FSW arena unusable.
Right.
You know, if we move the ring all the way up to the ramp area, the 25 feet would put us at the end of where the bleachers are. So we'd probably be able to have to take the bleachers down and sit 12 people, you know, if we were lucky.
Right.
And we redesigned everything now that it's down to 12 feet. And I was at the school yesterday and I taped off spots in the bleachers. And in the bleachers, there's about 37, 38 seats that are distanced for everybody, you know, in groups of four and some groups of three. So it's like we're not really looking for singulars because it is what it is right now. Then I did the front row and I was like, Jesus Christ, we got like 14, 15 seats. Hmm. And that kind of really puts a damper in trying to do stuff.
Right.
So, you know, on our sides, we probably have about 7 or 8 feet there. So by moving the ring 3 feet to the left, we can now also do a front row on the right side.
Okay.
So now that brings that number to about 30. And then where the merch counter used to be, and now there's nothing there but a table with the microwave on that we could move. There's also room because the distance between the bleachers and that wall is more than 6 feet. So we can add, 6 to 8 chairs. So figuring it all out, we can have a comfortable capacity of 75 people in there, which makes the March 27th Night of Champions Day of Reckoning show much more feasible to have at the FSW arena than at an outdoor spot like what we did with Beers and Body Slams.
Right.
You know, because again, are we going to get 100 people there? Maybe 150 that we can. I think this show needs to be done at the FSW arena, you know, for TV purposes, it'll look its best.
Right.
The lighting in a different spot. I don't know how good it is. I know when we did it at Neonopolis, the lighting wasn't good. We had to add our own lights to it to make it better, but it still wasn't great. Yeah. So doing it at the arena is a much better way for us to get things done. Unfortunately, every seat must be sold. You know, we can't be letting the wrestlers, you know, bring their groups of three, two, family, whatever. You know, we're also trying to put an area to the left side behind the on the entranceway, where there's the guardrail, keep that area open and, you know, have an area for six or seven family members to, you know, be able to sit comfortably. And if they want to watch the show, because we just don't have room to, you know, who do we differentiate from? You know, why is your family member more important? So it's got to be one or the other. So, you know, we're also doing on March 19th, we're going to be doing a Future Shock show, but it'll be an empty arena show. So we just want to get the logistics and everything set back up. It's going to be set up, you know, without the chairs, obviously. Yeah. So, you know, there's some room. But right now we have 12 feet. We still do got to move the ring closer to the ramp. So there's probably only going to be one way. So pretty much there's a small area to where the wrestlers can go. You know, one side with the fans when they have them is going to be off limits. So it's going to be either you go right in the ring or you come out and you go to the other side, one side. The other two sides are just going to be off limits. We don't want there to be issues. So it's like we want to keep this going. And, you know, we're making the plans for that. Today's March 9th. Well, who's to say on March 20th they don't bring it back to the 6-foot rule? Yeah. And if they do that, then we're, you know, back in good capacity. And, you know, we're at 50%, which is probably about 100. So we're not really losing that many seats.
Right.
Also, but 25 seats is still 25 seats when you got to, you know, pay people and, you know, just try to run a business.
Is it, you know, when you look at feasibility as a promoter, having to potentially go to an outside source, how much do you have to take into consideration that overhead in terms of, you know, if you go to a place and they charge you X with these limitations, do you have to figure out then, like, is it worth it if, you know, we could do 100 people or 200 people, but at the same time, the price we got to pay versus what we take in and, you know, what we give out in terms of, you know, paydays and stuff. How do you think about that? Even with, you know, let's say the regular, if times were, you know, normal and you did the casino shows, how do you figure that where you understand that, hey, we can do this because we're not taking a total bath? You know, obviously the arena is feasible for what's going on now. But when you start looking at potentially going back to casinos or, you know, any bigger venue, what is that process like?
Well, of course, you have to take into effect every dollar that is going out for something like that. You know, in the past, we did the first Beers and Body Slams, for example, we did in the Arts District.
Right.
And basically, you know, a building that had a concrete backyard, you know, and we kind of set it up and it wasn't the best looking place, but it was a way to do something outdoors. Unfortunately, in the summer, it's kind of hard to do things outside. It was 100 degrees, whatever. But the thing was, you know, he was charging us, you know, X amount of dollars. And another company in town was running also. And, you know, I ended up talking with the guy and he gave us a little bit of a discount compared because, you know, of what we told him we were going to bring to the table. You know, he had some food trucks and he was able through his license to sell beer and things like that. So he was going to make money in that situation. After we did the show, he was basically willing to give us the place for free, you know, but it was just, I just didn't feel logistically it was the best place. And at that point, that's when we had talked to the guy at the Nerd Bar, who we had been in discussions with, but they just never jumped at anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like everybody else, Jonathan, the owner, saw the viral video of Santana doing the moonwalk DDT with the Stratosphere in the background.
Right.
And his response was, oh, man, love to do it here, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, well, we could, you know, and then we made an arrangement. And the idea was to bring in a name wrestler on every show, and he would cover that. Okay, so we had brought in Sabu, and we brought in Hurricane, and we brought in Vampiro, and we brought in, you know, Cross, who was a bigger deal at the time, and things like that. And it worked out really well. We had a good crowd there. Again, it was really hot. You know, I always had the issues that behind the guardrail, everybody would sit and just watch the show for free. But as time has elapsed and I think about it now, it's like, you know what? Those motherfuckers were never going to pay for a ticket regardless.
Yeah.
Our fans, our hardcore fans, they want to sit there. They want to enjoy the show. You know, 95% of our fans that want to come are going to buy a ticket and they're going to watch the show. You know, we have things in place. You know, we're talking with Neonopolis also again about doing some stuff. And, you know, that's an option. The guys who did the one at the Arts District, we actually have to check out a place. I guess they got one by the old auction house, which I guess is near Cowabunga Bay.
Okay.
And they said it's a much nicer place. Well, they like dealing with us. You know, I'm easy to deal with. I tell it like it is. You know, I'm not going to be like, you know, I'll tell them this is what we're doing. This is what we're looking to pay. You know, what are you looking to do for us? You know, is it feasible for both parties to make some money out of the deal? After the March 27th show, we're wide open. I called Samstown last week. There's still nobody in the entertainment department. Value with that, there's a chance to run some stuff now. You might want to put some people in place.
Yeah.
But, you know, we also had a deal to go back to the Cannery, which, of course, is owned by Samstown people, you know, with Boyd Gaming. So everything is on hold there. We were talking about doing something at St. George, but then it was like, you know what? I'm going to hit up my contact at the Casablanca in Mesquite, because we had done a few shows there where they actually paid us good money to bring in Kevin Nash and Matt Hardy and, you know, a who's who, Morrison, when we did those first One Stars Collide. You know, right now, we're just looking for the venue. We're looking for, hey, you know what? Some of our fans will make a weekend out of it. That tent is so big, it seats a few thousand people. So we easily can put 250 people in there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it looked like it's empty, but it's still 250 people there. So, you know, that becomes an option. You know, even one of our former sponsors is talking about maybe barricading off their parking lot area to, but again, we'd have to see, you know, the county regulations and all that stuff about doing it there. But, you know, we're 6 days away from basically 100% no gray areas legalities of doing the shows. The only other thing I can hope for is they go from 12 feet to 6 feet and then the entire arena is back in play.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, the upcoming shows that you got planned with Future Shock and with the, what are you actually calling it? Because I don't want to say Night of Champions.
You know, it's the big show. It's the first open show where we can actually not have to hide the fan page information and not let any other fans know about it, because that's the problem. If we make a promotion, hey, we got a show Saturday, and we're only allowed 50 people. Now people are going to be like, oh, cool, FSW show. We're going to go. And now there's 85 people at the door.
Yeah.
The worst thing you can do is turn people away. So we just did invite onlys. We had people whose birthday party it was. It's family and friends. And that's where we're at. Now, you know, we can open it up. And of course, my fan page fans, the regulars who come to every show, you know, even at 15 front rows, like I knew exactly who we're going to offer those front row tickets to because they've been so good to us, you know, throughout the years. You know, if you've been good to us, I'm sorry, but, you know, a George Furman who's come to shows for 7 years and like missed four, you know, he's going to get first preference on that ticket.
Yeah.
You know, so now we're not going to really have that issue, you know, moving forward. So, yeah, it's called Day of Reckoning. Maybe it's like, you know, Day of Reckoning, Night of Champions. At this point, we're still adjusting the card. You know, right now we have four championship matches signed. We got Hammerstone is the new number one contender. So the former champ takes on his best friend, former best friend, back to best friend again, the heavyweight championship. The tag titles, Kenny and Shogun will be there defending against the Unguided. Then we also have Ice Williams and Funny Bone in a match stipulation that has yet to be determined. Then we are finally going to crown a Nevada State champion. You know, the guy who has held every championship in FSW against a man who has been there as long as anybody and who has never held a rest, not even FSW. He's never even held a championship in any company he's ever worked for. Huh. And so the hyper streak against Remy Marcel. So it's definitely interesting battle. You know, we will have a women's match on the show. We're also doing the women's show on April 2nd. So we might do a number one contenders match on the 27th to set up Maserati defending the belt on the 2nd. Yeah. We may not because I just found out we got Katarina and Estrelita from, you know, Mexico. She's going to be coming in and she's going to be returning once again. Nice. So, you know, we're trying to figure all that stuff out to wear that. And we also had planned to do a cash in the case, you know, ladder match where right. The winner gets a shot at any title in FSW. Now, the problem with that is the logistics of the ladder and, you know, how easy is it for six guys to maneuver if they're not all in the ring and how much space is there. So we're looking at that, you know, after his unbelievable performances, Eli Everfly is expected to be a part of that match. You know, a Hero Lou, a Class. Those are just, nice. You know, three of the names so far that we have. Depending on another option, Jay Vidal may enter the cash in the case. He's one of the hottest rising stars we got, but he's also part of the tag team. And then we're looking at doing probably a big tag team matchup that would feature teams like Death Proof and the RMB. And we're also talking with Toko Uso out of California, which is led by Juicy and his partner, who's the Samoan Lion, who's definitely somebody that we're excited to have on that show. You know, we're also talking with Brandon Gatson returning and, you know, some other big names who haven't appeared in an FSW ring for a very long time who may have appeared on the podcast, you know. So there's a lot of, you know, huge things on the horizon. And, you know, I keep watching that positivity rate and it keeps going down. So it's like as more stuff opens, if it keeps going down, there's no choice but to open more things up. So, you know, we're hoping anniversary show time late May, June. You know, unfortunately, we were planning on doing the Mecca May 28th, And then AEW threw a curveball at us, and this, we're going to do Double or Nothing in Jacksonville, because you know they don't want to, they don't know how many tickets they could sell at MGM right now. Maybe they could only sell 1,000.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Well, they don't want to do 1,000 people here, you know, and they've already made their decision. But at 50% going through the stuff now, if they, you know, if they had 5,000 or 6,000. You know, if it's 50% for the business over there, why isn't it 50% for the MGM to run AEW?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's the same philosophy. But, you know, the end of May, early June, we were going to do a Mecca and the anniversary show. So, you know, probably two of those big shows within a 3 or 4 week process. So right now we're still penciling in doing the anniversary show around that time frame, but the key is getting a, you know, bigger arena. That's our goal, to have the biggest show of the year is to return for the anniversary show.
Yeah.
You know, I was excited. I even hit up Matt Hardy about coming out because they'd be out here, you know, on the day before.
Right.
You know, because he does owe me a favor. You know what I mean? So we figured we could take advantage of it. But now that it's in Jacksonville, you know, we will see.
Well, I think according to this pay-per-view on Sunday, I think now you have to go through Hangman Page to book any of Matt Hardy's gigs, right?
That's true. So unfortunately, I don't know how it works on the independent gig. I think it's just his AEW salary that Big Money Matt has to give up.
You're going to send that $30 check to Hangman Page.
Yeah, I wish it was only that. Yeah, for Matt Hardy.
You know, when you're looking at some of the talent that's now surfacing all over in, you know, major companies and various other organizations around the country, what has your attention right now in terms of former FSW wrestlers who are doing good things out there?
You know, it's funny. We've had that recent, you know, uptick. You know, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we didn't know, Ryan Taylor got signed. Yeah. And immediately he was put on television, you know, across, of course. You know, when you just look at AEW, you know, you see, you know, Lacey getting a big push. You see Cross. You see, you know, even Robbie E, you know, the manager, you know, had a lot of, you know, appearances here in FSW. You know, AEW, it's good to see Brian Cage's long-lost brother, Christian Cage, has now AEW. So I'm looking forward to that tag team, you know, the Fighting Cage Brothers. You know, moving forward. But, you know, look at that AEW locker room, you know, going back to the very first show, having the Young Bucks and Brandon Cutler, you know, on that show. But you talk about a Brian Cage, who's one of their top guys, Lance Hoyt, you know, one of my favorite people in the world, you know, is on AEW. And if you look, no matter what locker room, then you go to Impact, you got Chris Bay. You got Sammy Callahan. You got Trey Miguel. You know, there's numerous guys that, you know, were part of, you know, the Meccas, Tommy Dreamer. You know, these aren't guys, even John Morrison, you know, in WWE. Yeah. These aren't guys who've worked one show in FSW. It's easy to bring in one guy. Hey, Kevin Nash, we brought in one guy, one big show, you know. That's not really alumni to me because he made his show. Right. But when John Morrison's worked 5 or 6 times and PJ Black has worked numerous times and Eli Drake, now known as LA Knight, you know, almost forgot about him. He was a 2-time FSW champion, wrestled for us for about 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, and we've been in existence 11. So the talent pool that comes through, if you're a wrestling fan, you know, there's 100 guys on television that you're like, wow, I've seen these guys a few times on FSW. You know, Moose has been here a few times. you know, and then you got Hammerstone, who's a big name guy who, you know, MLW might be a little bit under the radar, but they're still there. Then you go to Ring of Honor, and of course, Kenny King, mainstay, you know, our trainer, you know. But then you also got guys like Bateman and Brody King. You know, Bateman, you know, toward the end, before he got signed, we were using him on a semi-frequent basis. You know, Brody, you know, we used a few times when he was very, very young in the business.
Yeah.
And you know, we had a really cool faction with Bateman, Brody, and Sin Bodhi. And then because of scheduling issues, we couldn't really move forward with it. But, you know, all these guys, you just see the talent pool. It's amazing, like, who's next? You know, who's the guy? You know, we talked about, like, a Sefa Fatu. You know, I'm watching his cryptic Facebook posts about getting the call and this, and it's like, you know, we've talked, and I know he's on some company's radars.
Right.
So I haven't had the chance to speak with him, but it's like, hey, is he another guy, you know, that we could look at? You know, and to add to the Wall of Fame that we already have that also has the Reno Scum on it, who were, you know, they were the top tag team in FSW for many years,
yeah.
You know, and now they're mainstays in Impact Wrestling. So it's like, you got to watch these guys. And like I said, I know initially a lot of people, future stars of wrestling, it means they're not stars. People want to see stars. But now when you fast forward, people are like, wow, that name really transcends to what is going on. Like, who's next? You know, as we said, you know, is it the Unguided? Is it Ice Williams? You know, there's so much talent, young and old. You know, guys have been doing it forever. You know, the Remy's, the Cody's, you know, the RMB. You know, I know they're all happy that they got to, you know, travel in China and make a living there for a while. But making a living and making your name seen and heard all over the United States is probably a bigger goal, you know, for those guys involved.
Right.
You know, and it's like, you know, I know RMB, for example, they had a match, you know, scheduled for Impact that unfortunately there was a TV taping and they got bumped because of time restraints.
Right.
And, you know, I know how disappointed they were that they didn't get their opportunity to showcase because, you know, teams like the 1%, teams like Hammerstone, guys like Hammerstone, they all got, you know, to see what it was like to be part of a national taping and also perform on it.
Yeah.
You know, Damian Drake, in 1 week, he was on, you know, Ring of Honor. He was on Impact. He was in AAA. You know, and he might even did the spot with AEW where he was one of the early Jerichos.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and Chris Bay got to be on the WWE show, 205 Live, Impact, and Ring of Honor, you know, all in one month. So, you know, we pride ourselves. A lot of our guys are homegrown, and even more of them are, you know, finding talent outside the local landscape and making them regulars like a young guy like Class right now, who, you know, I think has definitely got a bright, bright future in this business.
Yeah.
And he's our guy now, you know, hey, when's the shows, you know, give me dates and you know, we're going to be his first priority, you know, unless somebody's really paying a lot of money for that psychological evaluation that day, but he could probably do it on a Zoom call as he drives up from Arizona. You know, as long as somebody else is driving, you know, one of the Arizona lackeys.
You know, speaking of that type of, you know, expansion, exposure for a lot of the guys, I know WrestleMania weekend is going to be coming up here in just over a month. And already GCW, the Generational Championship Wrestling, out of Florida, already has Funny Bone and Remy, and I might even be missing one other or two other people. How is it for you when you see that these guys are starting to catch the attention of companies that are out of the East Coast, and you're getting a chance to bring a little exposure of FSW talent to that side of the country. Is it something that really encourages you because not only the fans start recognizing them, but also other talent who are on these cards get to work with them, get to see what they're like, get to see how professional they are, and then it piques their interest to come back here? Is that like kind of the double benefit of having guys, you know, wrestle not only in the East Coast, but all over the country?
Well, you know, I would hope that the Remy Marcells, the Funny Bones, the Damian Drakes, the Matt Vandegrifts, who, you know, I know they're booked out in Mania weekend for GCW. I was also told that Jay Vidal and the Bad Bitches are going to be booked, I believe, for Effie's show.
Yeah.
So as ambassadors of FSW, you know, you're going to mingle a lot with the fans. And if the fans, you know, go up to Jay Vidal and say, "Hey, bro, man, I never seen you before. You know, where can I see more stuff?" Well, he has really no other option but said, "Hey, check out the FSW network. You're going to see me wrestle, you know, the hottest woman star in NXT, Zoe Stark, on her last match, one of her last matches before she left."
Yeah.
You know, Matt Vandegrift and Damian Drake, they work GCW, you know, and hopefully mentioning things. I know when they did the show at our school, you know, there was, you know, the pandemic going on. We even though it was empty arena, you know, I know Janella and Kevin Gill, some people were upset, like, "Hey, why didn't they mention FSW Arena?" And I was like, "Well, I think the reasoning was because of the fact that, you know, we're shooting live, they're doing stuff, regulations again are gray area." But Janella put over, "This is where Chris Bay trained," and blah, 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 and put over where they are. And unless you're blind, you should be able to see the big FSW banners that are on the wall. So, you know, it's the exposure, especially with having the network, that, you know, now maybe because of eight guys going to Mania weekend, you know, maybe they all have two fans that now sign up for the network. You know, that's 16 new people that maybe never heard of our shit.
Right.
And that's the most important thing, you know. We have fans that are ambassadors, Brad Reeder from New York,
yep,
who buys every merchandise thing available from anybody who he likes in FSW, and he likes a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that guy has one closet alone just full of FSW t-shirts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like guys like that, who I see him on Twitter, and he's always looking at, "Oh, maybe you guys should work together." And, you know, it definitely piques the interest of, you know, doing those joint shows. That's part of the reason why, whether it's a West Coast collective or, "Hey, how about that East Coast company that has a really good name brand on the East Coast? Come to Vegas." Everybody likes to come to Vegas. You know, yeah. It isn't like, "Hey, why don't you come to Des Moines, Iowa for this cool show we want to do?" Like, "Hey, you want to come to Vegas? And you come to Vegas and we do a show in a big casino and the production is top notch. And now maybe we run the pay-per-view, we get people to be part of the network." You know, that network ideas are always growing. You know, I want other companies to maybe put some stuff on, you know, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, "Hey, give me your, you know, give me your archives and stuff."
Right.
Maybe you want to air, you know, once a month, you know, a TV type show featuring some good stuff just to get the brand out there and get the awareness. That way, maybe sometime down the line, you know, people become aware, you know, just like there's our guys when Chris Bay and Cross were coming up, you know, now it's become that way with the TJ Crawfords and the Jordan Olivers and all these younger guys, you know, Trey Miguel and the Rascals, that's where they started as they made their way up. And then they kind of went from where they were located working all the Callahan shows to broadening their horizons to becoming big names to then having offers to work for major companies.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it all works hand in hand. You know, it's amazing how much the wrestling fans have really stepped up and, you know, supported companies throughout this time. You know, unfortunately, there's some that take advantage of the situation.
Yeah.
And you know, they that puts a bad taste in your mouth. And where did the money go? And you got these issues. But, you know, they are willing to support a product that, you know, they enjoy and want to see succeed.
You know, thinking about some of the talent that is younger talent out there, kind of maybe newer exposure to you. Are there any particular wrestlers that might be on your radar that maybe the fans didn't know that you've maybe watched and enjoyed? Is there, you know, anyone that you see that you go, hey, I wouldn't mind having them, you know, come in, who isn't a big name, obviously, but, you know, some people either send you tapes or you see something online. Is there anything that's catching your eye out there?
More so, my son really gets involved with checking out the younger guys and things like that. And then he'll say, hey, check this guy out.
Yeah.
Like, a couple of guys, you know, we talked about that Future Star Initiative, and the name I mentioned, Tyson Maddox, who's out of Atlanta, Georgia, who, you know, looks solid as can be. And it was like, hey, this is what you would need to do. And he was willing to book himself a flight to come out here and be part of stuff. And then we had to cancel in November because of whatever happened again. And since then, he's been on semi-regularly on AEW.
Right.
So, you know, I hit him up to say, hey, we're looking to run regularly again, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I know what we agreed on, but this is really all we can do. Just let you know if you're still interested, love to have you. You know, within the hour, he booked a flight and he's scheduled to be out here in May. So he's looking at the AEW Dark as an as exposure,
right,
but he's trying to get as much as he can everywhere. You know, we did a recent taping, you know, for a company, the guy's based out of England. And he brought in big name guys. He brought in up and coming guys, a Lee Moriarty, who was really, really good. A guy named Snoop, who was pretty good. You know, EC3 was also part of the taping, and Daivari and Cody, and, you know, a good amount of our regulars, you know, Sandra Moon and Maserati and Haley J from OVW. She's their women's champion, who's worked for us, you know, on a few occasions. But the one that I really had my eye on, he introduced me earlier the day, he was Juicy's partner. The Samoan Lion, Toa Leona, I believe that's it. And we have him, you know, in to come in and, you know, hoping to put it together with the tag team. If not, you know, I can't see him as not being a dominant force in the heavyweight division, you know. And there was other guys that they brought in that we've used once, a guy named Jack Cartwheel, very athletic, you know, smaller dude, you know, very impressive. And he's starting to get a little bit noticed more so on the West Coast. I know a guy a lot of people talk about. Again, he worked once, but it was like in a six-man. So we didn't really get to see a lot of him. D-Rogue, he calls himself the biggest cruiserweight in wrestling. My son really likes this guy. I believe his name's Conan Lycan, out of the Midwest. He was trained at Seth Rollins' school.
Yeah.
And my son just mentioned to me that he got booked at one of the Mania GCW shows. And, you know, he's a guy who is ready, willing, and able to come on out and, you know, showcase himself, you know, to hopefully be a guy that, you know, we can work something out. You know, a lot of these guys, AJZ, you know, he's definitely, you know, he worked Graves, and, you know, the character he plays is kind of like this chicken shit kind of heel, but he's extremely entertaining. But he's in great shape. But the proof of the pudding is when Graves, and then at the tapings, he wrestled Sean Daivari, and they put over, you know, he's only got 2 years in the business.
Wow.
And so it's kind of like the Sefa thing, you know, maybe being around the business a little bit, but sometimes it clicks a little quicker than, you know, for some than others. And, you know, Daivari really put him over strong. And then even guys like Shogun and Hiro from FSW, like Hiro Liu is, you know, he got to work EC3 at the taping because the guy was looking for somebody. And I said, I got a perfect guy for you. People don't know him. He looks like $1 million. And I get a funny EC3 story. So we're talking and I'm like, hey, you know, how did Hiro do? He goes, well, you know, we were talking about the match, and he's like, well, what do you want to do? And Hero's like, well, you know, I kind of like to do this, and I kind of like to do that, and then I'm going to fire up and stuff. And EC3's like, really? You're going to fire up? And he's like, yeah, I'll do this, that, and the other thing. And then when I fire up, we're going to do this. And he's like, really? You're going to fire up? Because he's like the quietest, mellowest dude. Yes. That – whatever you want to do, which again is his downfall, that he'll wrestle a guy way beneath him. And it's like, what did you want to do? It's like, no, Hiro, it's what you want to do.
Yeah.
And he says, you know what? He did what he said he was going to do, and he fired up. It was great. So he's, you know, the potential is there, you know, but here's a guy that over the last year, he's really taken a step forward. But here's a guy that's really missed out on the opportunity of getting to wrestle in California with all these guys.
Yeah.
Going to Arizona and wrestle. Like, this is a big boy. This is a guy who is championship material. You know what I mean? But he's missed out on, you know, as we said, you know, 50 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, he's missed out on 100 matches. You know, he probably had 15 or 20 with us, but he's probably missed out on all these others, you know? And as I said before, you know, as much as the WWE and AEW and Ring of Honor and Impact are signing all these guys, it's amazing how much talent there still is out there.
Yeah.
Like, I say there's more talent now than I've ever seen in my entire life. Yeah. Like, you could lose the Rascals and you could lose, you know, Chris Bay and Cross and Taylor and Lacey and Bateman and Brody King and the Impact guys that got signed and the AEW guys that got signed, you know, that youngster Christian Cage, you know, I really felt that guy was going to break through somewhere, you know. And you also look and then, wow, there's this guy and there's, this, you know, there's always that next step,
yeah.
You know, I remember when we were doing big shows in 2014 with the IWF, and it was like, you know, Ricochet and Swan, they were like that super indie guys. And then all of a sudden, you know, one went to Lucha Underground and Swan ended up getting signed. But then like Shane Strickland stepped in,
yeah.
And then Strickland kind of went to Lucha Underground, so he couldn't really do a lot of stuff. And then all of a sudden the Rascals kind of came in, and there was always that follow through. And there was always somebody to take the spot of that super indie guy.
Yeah.
And you know, when I look now, it's like trying to put the ideas for the Mecca. Wow, there's so much to choose from.
Yeah.
And the great thing is the fact that in Impact, you can use anybody. I can use Willie Mack. You know, I can use Chris Bay.
Right.
You know, I can use anyone on their roster as long as they give the okay. And in most cases, you know, you might have to go through the office, but we have great relationships, so they give us a good deal. If, like, when we had to use Willie Mack in the past, you know, I used Willie all the time. But then with a new contract, he's like, hey, you got to go to the office. So it's like, oh, I got to make a call to who? D'Lo Brown, who's one of our trainers. So it's like, hey, bro, we need Willie. But, hey, this is what we can do. It's like, okay. Like, they didn't charge us that uptick rate, you know what I mean? We appreciate that. Hey, this is what we can afford. Love to have him. Instead of him not being booked, can we use Willie Mack?
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously we had him go over at the Mecca, so we didn't have any fears that we wouldn't be allowed to use him again. And him and Sefa had one of the best matches on the show.
Yeah.
And that's the advantage of working those with those companies in AEW. Like in EC3, we talked, you know, he loves Chris Bay. Well, maybe we're going to get that Chris Bay EC3 match. But I know Chris Bay's dying to work Leo Rush. So, you know, we've discussed that possibility.
Yeah.
You know, so there's so much out there. There's guys that leave, like Leo Rush, who are now a hotter commodity than they were before in the indies. And he really didn't have much of a run in WWE at all. He was a manager for Lashley.
Yeah.
Nobody watched Leo Rush on Monday Night Raw and was like, oh, what a great wrestler. Blah, blah. He never did. You know, he was on NXT, wrestled for a bit, but he was a spokesman.
Yeah.
Lashley. And the fact of the matter is now he's come back and he's a guy that he's wanted by everybody.
Yeah.
You know? And like I said, you know, once we get this Mecca going, you know, we got a list, you know, 30, 40 guys. And now it depending on pricing and, you know, who are our mainstays? Well, Hammerstone's a mainstay. Chris Bay's a mainstay. You know, they're in the, you know, semifinals of the tournament. You know, Willie Mack, a Sefa Fatu, a Tom Lawler. You know, we can go to our tag teams. You know, all those guys, all our top guys are in play. And then we mix in, you know, a guy like a Tom Lawler who doesn't really wrestle much for FSW, but he would at the Mecca, and he definitely does at Natural Born Killers. And, you know, we had Brian Pillman booked, and, you know, he's just waiting for the contract to expire, I guess. He now lives in Jacksonville. So, hey, that's kind of coincidental. Oh, yeah, he works AEW all the time,
right?
You know, and he's working main roster matches. So now it's like, hey, that Lee Moriarty guy might be a guy on our radar who's up and coming, and he's not going to be crazily priced because he's trying to get that exposure, and then he becomes affordable. You know, guy who was impressive when he was out here, Daga. You know, he's made inklings about, and I remember talking with Cross that Daga really wanted to work Natural Born Killers. So, and then looking at that crew that just worked at Bloodsport, a guy like Tito Escondido and Calder, you know, they worked each other at our show.
Yeah.
So there's so many guys that we can bring in, and you know, we're hoping to do Natural Born Killers, you know, in April or May. And, you know, we've talked with Tom Lawler about being the, you know, it's kind of like he's going to replace Cross. Tom Lawler presents. And, you know, I saw him again a couple weeks ago, Simon Gotch, another guy that, as on Natural Born Killers, he is definitely, you know, a guy to have. I can call up MVP, but I'm pretty sure he's not going to be able to make it this time.
Well, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Leo Rush was pretty much replaced by MVP in that role of...
there you go.
You know, as we kind of start looking at wrapping up here, I got to ask you about the ending of AEW had everyone in a tizzy because the gimmick didn't explode like it was supposed to explode for the big finish. And people who know Japanese death matches know that that a lot of times is the big ending. Let me ask you this, as a promoter, when you have something that is a gimmicked match, what is the best way for dealing with problems that you don't anticipate? And could you have, I mean, could you, if something like that is set up, how foolproof can you get it to make sure that what you need the gimmick to do, it actually does to finish the story or match in this case?
Well, we're at a whole different level than WWE, AEW, Impact, you know.
Sure.
My dream has always been to do an Ultimate X match. Mm-hmm. We've always had those No Limit guys. And Disco Inferno was part of the creation of the Ultimate X match.
Yeah.
And knows the way it is. And as I just said that right now, my thinking is, if we can't do the ladder match, I'm going to hit up Disco and see if we could set up the arena. And instead of a cash in the case ladder match with ladders going everywhere, we have an Ultimate X match instead. Unfortunately, we probably have to replace a Class and a Hero Lou.
Right.
You know what I mean? But, you know, imagine an Eli Everfly, a Gatson, a Jay Vidal, you know. Funny Bone, even though he's going to be in a different match. But, you know, you put together those No Limits guys that Matt Vandegrift, yeah. Damian, Jake,
yeah.
You know, I could put 10 guys in that match, you know, that would kill it. So I'm glad you brought that up for me because I may have to go into that manner. But again, the problem is with the Ultimate X match, for example. You know, you got to get poles. You got to get things that are sturdy.
Right.
You know, we're in a limited spot, even with our steel cage. When we bring in our steel cage, we don't even have a fucking door because we get it at Tiberti Fencing, and they don't make it with the door.
Right.
So we have to open it up and then tie it with tie downs.
Right.
And hope if a guy tries to climb over that one of the fence sides doesn't just fall into the audience and kill 9 people.
Oh man! At
that point, I don't think Samstown would want us back. You know, even though they may not now. Who knows? But with WWE, we've seen it before where they've had, you know, the fake explosions, and I remember, you know, Shane McMahon and Kane in an Inferno match, and you know, it's Hollywood theatrics.
Right.
And when you're live, guess what? If it fucks up the first time, there's nothing you could do about it.
Right.
You know, I didn't see the thing that happened on Sunday, but I read everything about it and heard about it. And it's a difficult situation because Eddie Kingston's trying to sell something.
Yeah.
Doesn't sell it, it's even flatter than if he does sell it.
Right.
But if he does sell it, you know, I remember a match that we had years ago, and it was the Rocknest Monsters and the Reno Scum. Okay. It might have been a 4-way tag, but I just remember that Luster, who's like 6'5", and Yuma, who's a lot smaller. He started throwing these forearms, and they just didn't have a lot on them. And I was like, please don't sell them, Luster, you know, because it was like they looked very powder puffy,
right?
You know, and it really took me out of the match because probably after that spot, a tag was made and good time came in, and they probably did a super cool double team move.
Right.
But I couldn't tell you what happened right after that spot. Because that spot I focused in on, and it took me out of the match.
You know, it's interesting that you said that because of the fact that you actually pointed out that spot. That's what stuck with you. That's your memory. All these years later, you don't know what happened. Even, you know, it's that to me is the fascinating thing, is that one little thing like that can affect a fan's memory for the next 10, 15 years.
And, you know, in a lot of cases, a lot of the fans aren't intently watching. The smart ones do, and they right. knew. And that's how the You Fucked Up chant started and the other stuff.
Right.
While other people just be generally respectful because the guy was trying to do something that you could never do in a million years. But as wrestling fans got quote-unquote smarter, you know, that they need to pick apart things. And in that situation, you know, I'm really not sure what can be done. You know, I guess the first question is, was that done exactly the way the explosives were supposed to go out?
Right.
If it were, then somebody in production should have been like, dude, this fucking blows.
Right.
Now, we don't know. Now, as much money as AEW spends, I highly doubt that they're skimping in any way on making the pyro cheaper.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know, I've read numerous things like, well, you know, they didn't want the venue to get fucked up. And, you know, and it's like, bro, the WWE does it all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, it's they're self-contained. It's like when you bring a building down in Vegas, shit doesn't go all over the place and fucking 32 people die. That shit motherfucker goes right down.
Yeah.
Because they properly put the explosives because they're experts and they know what we're doing. Nobody watching's a fucking expert. So again, how much can you practice that?
Right.
Probably can't. And you know, you got your best people on it. And, you know, 1 in 100, it's something bad's gonna happen. Right. Well, guess what? It happened. So now it'll be the talk of the town. So something happens on SmackDown or something happens next week, and then it'll all be forgotten about.
Right.
They tried to do something. You know, how many matches happened in Japan like that? How many were it screwed up? No idea, because back then nobody saw it on social media 17 million times.
Right.
You know, I'm pretty sure there was, you know, a time Mick Foley or Terry Funk had a match there where something didn't go right in the barbed wire exploding death match. You know what I mean? And, Yeah. You know, it is what it is. You know, can't blame anybody. Moxley supposedly out. He's laying on the ground. He can't do anything.
Right.
Eddie King trying to protect him. The thing goes off. What the fuck's he supposed to do?
Right.
You know, I don't know. You know, it's a pretty, all I know is it's a pretty shitty spot to be in.
Yeah.
And because no matter what you do,
you don't win.
Be like, oh, that sucked. Oh, yeah. That was fucked up. You know.
Well, let me ask you in general, what are your personal feelings about that the Japanese deathmatch style? Are you a fan of it, or are you, you know, not really your tea, but you can see where it's, you know, useful?
It's wrestling. Everything has its place. I'm not one, you know, we brought in a guy who had a gimmick that I didn't care for, but he was a draw and he did the gimmick and everybody popped and he sold tickets. So great. Just because I don't like it, I have a different taste of people. I'm 55 years old. You know, I'm more into the Ravishing Rick Rude days and the, you know, Jake the Snakes and you know, Million Dollar Man, where characters ran wild. And when, you know, they had a feud and it ended, that was it.
Yeah.
You know, how many times does Drew McIntyre have to beat Sheamus? You know, what I don't get is,
yeah,
I beat, okay, you laid me out. Well, I beat you again. Oh, well, I'm not done with you. Oh, okay. It's like, you know, it isn't like they just had a random match. They're having no DQ matches. They're having this match. They're having right. that match. It's like, it never ends.
Right.
So, again, it's video game wrestling. And there's no, not that there's no passion in the wrestlers. There's no passion for the fans to get behind something.
Yeah.
Like, you could hate the Randy Orton thing with the goo and all this other shit, or you could love it. But sometimes shit overstays its welcome. And, you know, I was having this conversation. WWE is just looking to put out content. It doesn't matter where those stories go with the content. Because also remember back in the 90s, when Andre the Giant had his run, he would then leave for a year. And he'd go to Japan, and then he might wrestle for Bill Watts.
Right.
And then he might stop in WCW, NWA, whatever. Now it's like when the Big Show, who's a monster compared to everybody else, and now loses his championship match, even if you take 2 months off, he's still that guy who has been exposed. Andre was never exposed. He lost to Hogan one time.
Right.
Where it was, oh, he almost pinned him in the first 5 seconds. I thought it was great. I was like, oh, it was three. I'm sitting there. But, of course, the camera angle has it where he actually had his shoulder up. But once that ended, he went on to other things.
Right.
And nobody goes on to other things. It's like, it isn't like McIntyre and Sheamus are on Raw and SmackDown, but they're only on one show. And the show's on every week and the pay-per-views every month, yet we have to see them interact 9 times.
Right.
Like, it shouldn't be that much. When the difference was when Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant came out, Bobby Heenan comes out, he ripped a necklace. They didn't have a 6-man tag the week before on TV or a tag match where whoever won got to pick the stipulation of a match. And in WWE, anybody who is the fucking champion and wrestles a non-title match 9 out of 10 times, they lose. So now you can get the title match.
Right.
You know who's going to win and who's going to lose. Of course, Riddle's going to beat the low-card guy in a non-title match. But when Lashley, whoever it was, wrestled Riddle in a non-title match, Riddle had a win. Instead of the old days where Riddle beat this guy, Riddle beat that guy, and now I'm coming for you, and they set it up, and then next month on pay-per-view, you're going to see the match. And then it's possible it ends up in a DQ or count out, and then you did the ladder match, or then you did the cage match. You know, it was the same tried and true method, Madison Square Garden. Hulk Hogan would come out, and he'd finish his feud with somebody. And then on TV, here comes Earthquake. And Earthquake just demolishes, like, the biggest jobbers in WWF.
Right.
And he a mid-card guy like SD Jones, who's a mid-card guy, low mid-card guy. Then he kind of steps up a little. And then Heenan calls out Hogan. And then him and Hogan mouth off on TV because Hogan didn't wrestle on television. So then they go to Madison Square Garden, and Earthquake wins by a count out or a DQ or whatever. Then they'd have the second match that would lead to some giant schmoz. And then, oh, my God, it's a steel cage match.
Right.
And Hulk Hogan would win. It would be 3 months, but they wouldn't wrestle on TV every week. Now it could be 3 months of matches. But you've also wrestled 6 times in a tag, in a singles, in a four-way, and now you've seen the guy wrestle 50 times.
Yeah.
Like, after years ago, it was some website was doing something, and it was John Cena, it was Triple H, and I'm not sure who the third guy was. It might have been The Rock at that time. I'm not sure. But they said there was 12 pay-per-views that month, that year. And in the 12 pay-per-views, the main event was in 9 or 10 of them were some combination of those three guys.
Right.
So Triple H and The Rock and Triple H and Cena and The Rock and Cena and a three-way. And Rock and Cena again. That literally every month for almost a year were the same guys in the match.
Right.
Like, and now you wonder why the ratings are 1.9. Oh, they're 1.9 because everybody's watching on YouTube. And it's 1.9 because people are looking at it on their phones. And they're streaming it on the website. And there's all these excuses for the reasoning why their ratings aren't as high.
Yeah.
And I would have to say there's, you know, there's some validation in it. But I don't think the plummeting, there's just not as many wrestling fans.
Yeah.
You know, as there once was. And the hardcore fans are the hardcore fans. And people wonder why Goldberg's on TV, because they're hoping, you know, it pops some old-time people who were fans that don't really watch that more. Oh, shit, Goldberg's on.
Yeah.
And then you hear other people like, Jesus Christ, Goldberg's 100 years old. What the fuck is he doing wrestling? Wrestling at 60 years old? You know, we used to laugh at Ric Flair doing spots at 65. You know what I mean? But it was like, it was Ric Flair.
Yeah.
But he'd do the microphone and it would be passable.
Yeah.
You know, now it's like, you know, it is what it is. We try to at least create feuds. You know, we set up the stuff with Ice and Funny Bone. He attacked him. He got involved and cost him a match. And they did a match and something happened. And in reality, this has taken 6 months because we can't really do any shows.
Right.
But in reality, it'd be a 2 or 3 month thing that would culminate, you know, in, say, a Heaven and Hell match at Samstown.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, that might be the idea for the match at the 27th, the Heaven and Hell match. Especially if we don't do the ladder match and we do the Ultimate X match.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Joe, I think we covered a lot today. And, you know, the network, of course, as always, if you're watching this or listening, please just, you know, subscribe. It's only, you know, a few bucks a month out of your pocket for all the content and stuff you really can't find anywhere else on a lot of
$6.99. Eli Everfly and Jay Vidal was worth the month itself. Just that match.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So please, you know, check out FSW, you know, tune into the network. Keep your eyes peeled too for, if you do have the subscription, you get to see, a lot of these, cards as they're going on, and you know, that's very, very helpful if you live in, let's say, Florida, and you know, want to check out some of the talent out here. Also, Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting, please keep us in mind and give us a listen. Joe, any final words to everyone out there listening?
Yeah, first, talk a little about the network. We got a lot of things we're working on. We have a documentary that we're hoping the production people get off their ass because we got some stuff done that we want to do, a Lacey Ryan. We just got to put it together. Hopefully that'll be on in a few weeks. We're going to be starting the weekly television show. We're in the process today. We're going to go in and do the hosting segments and stuff. And we are ready, hopefully, in another, I'm just going to say 2 weeks, we'll have episode one, and it'll be a continuous thing. It'll air exclusively on the network, but within a week, probably 6 days later, because we'll probably debut the show on a Saturday night. Not sure yet what's a good day. It'll be on the network one day. And then probably 5 or 6 days later, it'll be available on Twitch and YouTube. We want as many eyes on it as possible. You know, I know the entire Nevada State Championship Tournament will be on there starting week one. We're going to have two matches. In week two, we'll have two matches, eight-man tournament that's going to go down to one. So a lot of this stuff has not even been seen before unless you were live at the arena.
Yeah.
You know, we had filmed that a while back, and now we're going to do, you know, have the continuity, and we're putting everything together. When I get done with you now, I got to put the other week. So my guy, David Lawson, and Pete Wilbur from the Wilbur Club are going to be co-hosting on that. I got one of my favorite voiceover people in the world, John Lindquist, who I worked with at KLAV when I did the Wrestling Zone. You know, I got Shibata, got another guy. They did the voiceover, but it just didn't have that movie voice that John has. So I'm excited. We're doing a Nevada State title tournament, you know, thing between Remy Marcel and Hyperstreak. So we got a nice little video package, and I felt it really, really needed that cool voiceover, like you're watching the movie trailer show.
Yeah.
I used to love on the E Network back in the day. I could just sit and watch movie trailers.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, even that, you know, getting a professional announcer to do voiceovers, like, you know, no confusion. Like, I know I can do it and I sound all right, but it's not what I'm looking for. Yeah. You know, if I wasn't me and heard me doing, I'd be like, yeah, that's okay. But I want it to be, you know, something you remember.
Yeah.
So, you know, So like I said, with that, you know, upgrading everything, you know, we got events planned. We got ideas. We're just hoping that, you know, we could soar through. And then hopefully, as I said, you know, for our anniversary show, we can do our Hall of Fame ceremony. And maybe if the capacities are still 250, I'd love to do a two-night anniversary show, kind of like with WrestleMania. Smart. They're only allowed X amount of seats. You know, they can sell 70,000 seats, but right now they can only do 35. So what we're going to do is 35 twice, which gives some other people the opportunity to see it that wouldn't been able to before in the past. And you also can do some cool things, you know, from the Saturday into the Sunday.
Yeah.
To where, you know, maybe an angle on Saturday happens that sets up a big championship match on Sunday. You know, maybe Edge beats Roman Reigns for the title on Saturday, and Karrion Kross lays him out and wins the belt on Sunday. Not that I have any inside information.
I think we just heard the official pitch. Mr. Levesque, please listen closely and hear the pleas of.
Well. My other option, they didn't sign Christian. I was going to have Edge and Christian versus Cross and Orton. You know, Orton made the comment about Cross. Well, come on up. What are you waiting for? Now, all of a sudden, they're the two psychotic dudes who Orton has the heat with Edge and Christian to begin with. Cross steps in. They make Cross the star. As usual, Christian could take the pin because you can't pin Edge. But Christian takes the pin. Cross goes over, and a star is now born.
Well, on that note, everyone, I want to thank you again for tuning in and listening this week, and we shall see you guys next time.